Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight with me, Tian Wei. Last week, representatives of the Chinese and American militaries took part in the China-U.S. Military Maritime Consultative Agreement meeting in Hawaii. The meeting was the first time in 2 years under a military maritime consultation. The two sides exchanged thoughts on the current maritime and air safety situation. According to the Chinese Defense Ministry readout, China will safeguard its territorial sovereignty and maritime rights and interests while maintaining regional peace and stability. So what does the resumed MMCA meeting tell us about China-U.S. military ties? On this and more, I talked to Senior Colonel Zhou Bo, a senior fellow from the Center for International Security and Strategy with Tsinghua University now. China-U.S. military maritime security dialogue wrapped up over the weekend. Now it's being described as candid and constructive. You have been participating in earlier rounds of discussions between the two militaries for years. So tell me more about exactly what is the nature of this dialogue and what does it say about the current state of the two militaries?
Well, this kind of standoff between Chinese and American aircraft and ships have been going on for decades. So as early as 1998, China actually has signed what we call the military maritime consultative mechanism with the United States. It was signed on the Chinese side by our Defense Minister General Chi Hao-tian with American Secretary of Defense William Cole. So this agreement has been there for decades, and every year we would have bilateral talks at operation levels on how this agreement has been implemented. It is at two levels, basically one at junior level, that is at a colonel or captain level, the other is at a major general level. On annual basis, or terminally held in the China's capital and in American capital. Over Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, which caused a strong protest from Chinese side, so China has decided to suspend this conversation. But after a while, and with the meeting of President Xi Jinping and President Joe Biden, and as a result of the agreement, this kind of talk has resumed. I would say this is very good, because this is badly needed, given that we two militaries really had too many close sometimes dangerous encounters, both at sea and in the air.
Senior Colonel Zhou, as you know, this dialogue calls for the implementation of the rules of behaviors, both in the air and also in the sea, as you just mentioned. What to you are the most difficult parts of these rules to be implemented, particularly given the current realities of U.S.-China relations?
Well, they are just the old problems. For example, both sides do not want to have a conflict, and both sides want to avoid accidents. But the fact is, Americans keep sending aircraft and ships to China's EEZ or even airspace. And this is a fundamental cause for this kind of a disagreement, because both sides talk about the one term in Chinese, that is anquan. But in English, there could be two different things. For Americans, this is about safety of the property and the safety of the personnel. But for China, it's about sovereignty and rights and interest. So these two things are totally different. Therefore, we do not seem to have find a good way of resolving all this issue. Both sides talk about a good airmanship, good seamanship, but this can hardly be quantified. You know, what is good, airmanship and seamanship? And he says avoiding a collision, of course, is to keep a safe distance. But even it is difficult to say what is exactly the safe distance, because it would involve so many elements. For example, when two ships are sitting together or getting closer to one another, the size of the ships, the speed of the ships, the visibility at sea, the wind of the speed, all this would affect this kind of a good seamanship. Therefore, it is very much each side's own interpretation of what constitutes good seamanship or good airmanship. But if all these two issues would involve political issues, such as one's feeling about sovereignty and territorial integrity, then things got much more complicated.
To the Chinese side, what is quote unquote good seamanship and airmanship, particularly, for example, the issues on the South China Sea?
On the international maritime law, for example, freedom of navigation and overflight is agreed by both China and the United States. But we do not have an agreement as to what freedom of navigation and overflight would actually imply. For example, the United States would consider it could include military ships and military aircraft, which is not excluded from the UN Convention of the Sea. But there is no clear indication in the UN Convention of the Sea that it would include, black and white military aircraft and military ships. And then there are also some other debates about peaceful purposes, which is also another concept in the international law. But what is peaceful purpose? The United States may say, okay, I just came here for peaceful purposes. And China would consider this is a violation of China's sovereignty and territorial integrity. How can that be for peaceful purposes? And then there are things like due regards. You know, according to the law, you have to show due regards, even if you are getting, into the exclusive economic zone or territorial water or another country. But then China would say that if you would come more than 1,000 times in a year, that is not due regard. That is a total disregard.
And this is very interesting to look into, particularly what happened after this dialogue. We understand that there were some joint military exercises in the South China Sea by some militaries. Meanwhile, China also claimed during the weekend that it also began its own. So how do you see the very intense interactions in that territory right after China-US dialogue, which were being described as constructive?
They are certainly related, but not so directly. For example, the joint exercise among the Filipino Navy, U.S. Navy, and the Japanese self-defense forces is basically a joint effort to bolster Philippines' claim in the South China Sea. Chinese reaction could be read as a kind of warning or counter-reaction. So you're actually touching upon another issue, that is the recent spat between China and the Philippines on Zhengai Jiao, which in English is called the Second Thomas Shoal.
What does that say about the results of the earlier dialogue between China and the United States? One would assume these kind of joint exercises between U.S., Japan, and the Philippines would be planned earlier.
No, this kind of American-led exercises would have nothing to do with the bilateral agreement between China and the U.S. because the agreement, the so-called rule of behavior for encounters at the sea or in the air, is actually meant to avoid dangerous encounters between aircraft and ships of the Chinese and American sides. Yeah, so it is about some dangerous accidental encounters. It has nothing to do with the joint exercises that involve the Philippines and Japan.
The participating in multilateral events by the U.S. side, would that increase the opportunities for China and the U.S. on some of the controversial issues to have future clashes?
That's a good point, because traditionally, all the agreements are actually on a bilateral basis. But now we're actually seeing a new situation, that is the involvement of third parties in the same area. That would certainly add to more opportunities of these encounters between the Chinese military and the foreign military. So, and this kind of difficult situation is unprecedented, and it was not discussed before. Therefore, this is a new situation. So things actually are becoming more complicated in that, as I said before, all the agreements we made in the past are about bilateral encounters.
Well, at the same time, you do notice that the Chinese side announced over the weekend of the military exercise in the South China Sea. So to your knowledge, Senior Colonel Zhou, how often or how as a common practice China would do that in response to others, and also right after China-U.S. dialogue on the through the militaries? And also, what this could say, what kind of message do you think this is sending to the relevant parties?
There could be two situations. The first situation is that we would do joint exercises anyway, because in our own water, in our own space, we can do this kind of exercises ourselves. The second, it can be read as a kind of response to the joint exercises that were just concluded, right? Because this can be read as a kind of response. I think, be it joint exercises on our part or take it as a response to the joint exercises by other parties, it shows the resolve of PLA to safeguard what we believe to be our sovereignty and territorial integrity. Mm-hmm. There should be no doubt about that.
On the other hand, how much danger do you see the issue of South China Sea actually involves in a year in which geopolitics is likely to be further escalated as a result of the U.S. Presidential election and also the uncertainties involving a third party, for example, the Philippines?
That's a good question. If you look at the whole world, you would find actually two wars are going on, one in the Ukraine, another in the Middle East. So in this part of the world, things are more quiet, to the relief of everybody. But at the same time, I believe the Filipino government is in violation of its own promise made in 1999 of towing away a rusty ship that they deliberately stranded on the Ngaijiao, the second Thomas Shoal. There are some arguments in the Philippines as to whether the Filipino government then, whether it has made this promise or not. But I think I think they did, because according to Chinese white paper is something very serious, right? In the Chinese white paper on the arbitration initiated by the Philippines, the Chinese government has mentioned clearly in the paragraph 51 that the Filipino government raised the reason of stranding the ship being technical difficulties, quoted technical difficulty. So if we quote the Filipino government's remarks in this way, I believe the Chinese government should have sound evidence that the Filipino government then did make such a promise. Now they're violating the promise. They're trying to fortify the ship by sending building materials. That is something we cannot tolerate. So my best hope actually is that Mother Nature solves this problem, that you do not violate your promise. And we would not do anything that might not seem so comfortable in your eyes. Then let Mother Nature solve this problem, and then there is peace.
According to a readout coming from China's Ministry of Defense, MODs, right after the China-U.S. dialogue, here's what it said. The Chinese military will continue to respond to all dangerous provocations in accordance with the law and regulations, resolutely safeguard its territorial sovereignty and maritime rights and interests, and maritime regional peace and stability and prosperity as well. So according to this, certainly, as you just mentioned, China would respond, but what are the different degrees of responses? And how will China look at the third party regarding a very controversial issue vis-a-vis China's relations with the United States, particularly the two militaries' discussions?
It first depends on how the Filipino government is going to act. Right now, my worry is that they have climbed too high up in the tree, so they cannot climb down. Rhetorically, right? But still, I believe they have to back down, because first of all, they made a promise in the past. Second, if you compare the military strength between the PLA and the Filipino military, well, this is simply incomparable. And we do not say that we would use force against the Filipino, because according to the Declaration of Code of Conduct made in 2002, use of force is to be discouraged. In this case, And historically, China has never threatened to use force against any ASEAN claimants. For example, on the Taiwan issue, we actually have made clear that there are three situations where China might apply non-peaceful means to resolve the Taiwan issue. But between China and the ASEAN, we have never talked about the use of force. But then the Filipino government cannot take it for granted that they can do whatever they want. Because if they would make the situation totally uncontrollable, then I believe we have enough options. As to how Americans might be involved, they have a defense treaty between the Philippines and the United States. And I believe the United States at this moment is also keeping a kind of a strategic ambiguity. They have not talked about anything that might be so alarming, because it really depends on how the Filipinos are going to behave. And I personally believe the United States doesn't want to be involved militarily in such an unpleasant situation. Why would they? Yeah, because of a dispute over a shore between China and the Philippines. Don't they have enough troubles elsewhere already?
Sir Colonel Zhou, there has been a genuine concern in China about whether the U.S. Would take advantage of any situations to exercise its own military power on issues regarding China, particularly in a year when their domestic politics is so much high on the agenda. How much concern is there from the Chinese military or from Chinese military experts like you?
What I can say for sure is that they have negotiated, for example, with the Filipino government of letting the Philippines opening up to nine military bases in the Philippines. So that is something very much for sure. The question is, why would they do that, right? Mm. Is it really for any possible dispute in the South China Sea, or is it more for the Taiwan issue? Yeah, I think the United States is making preparation for the worst scenario within the First Chain Island. So things are not really moving in a good direction. They are worried. They worry that China might be taking some measures, against Taiwanese authorities, while this kind of military preparations of strengthening the military presence, either in Taiwan or in the Philippines or anywhere along the First Channel Islands, the Chinese government would read it as a kind of American efforts, to counter China, to keep China within the first chain of islands. Mm-hmm. So this kind of, secure dilemma cannot be easily resolved.
Mm-hmm. And how is China preparing for the worst scenario? Of course, I know there are certain informations that's not likely to be shared by this conversation, but how is China looking at the overall situation and articulate the preparations that need to be done?
Well, in this whole region, which is not necessarily the South China Sea, I think there are only a few kinds of different but dangerous situations. One is another collision, either by ships or aircraft, between the Chinese and the American military, mostly in the South China Sea. Another is a Taiwan issue. And then we may have this kind of a new situation that has just cropped up. What I mean, the role of the third parties, because previously speaking, we didn't spend much time to talk about this kind of new situation. Mm. So in the past, the China and the United States have talked about, crisis prevention, crisis management, but not in a profound way. Yeah, we had once talked about this kind of situation, but not at a very high level. And so this kind of conversation should really be followed. So between China and the United States, it's not only about avoiding ships and aircraft getting too close to one another. That is only one situation. There are some other situations as well.
Like, what are some of the other situations that you could think of, Senior Colonel Zhou, and also share on the public platform with us, if you were participating as a member of the Chinese delegation in those dialogues?
Well, I have mentioned some of the situations, but actually I'm also thinking about somewhere else. For example, even hypothetically speaking, the Chinese Navy is becoming stronger and stronger. Actually, it is the largest Navy in terms of number of ships, right? And these ships now are seen around the world. Yeah, the Chinese Navy is not only patrolling the waters near Chinese coast. It is found in the Gulf of Aden. It sailed along Bering Strait. It has sailed along the western coast of Africa. So even in theory, there are more chances of Chinese Navy meeting American Navy elsewhere. Yeah, so that would invite a situation. How would we interact, with one another? The Chinese Navy, for example, is still in the Gulf of Aden, which is actually so close to the Red Sea, where the Houthis, are fighting on a daily basis against some ships sailing to Israel. Mm-hmm. So the American navies and the British navies are fighting the Houthis there. And we are not so far away from them. All these kind of new situations would have to draw people's attention.
How do you see, from a military's perspective, China's balance of interactions with the different parties? And what kind of message do you see as a military man this is sending to the rest of the world?
Yeah, for example, even you mentioned about the close interaction between the Chinese and American leaders and some senior officials. Mm-hmm. This shows that this China and U.S. Relationship is not so black and white. Yeah, it is a blending of both competition and cooperation. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of the world, I think it is easier for me to say that nowadays nobody is stupid enough to blindly pick a side with either China or the United States. European countries would have so many interests of their own. So the fact that the people are coming to interact with China in spite of the war that is going on in Europe demonstrated that people are still trying to make a living and the people are still trying to have as much cooperation as possible.
Senior Colonel Zhou, now, China's military is developing very fast. Of course, others try to describe this in a way that is what they consider as threat to the rest of the world. But as a military man from China yourself, I'm sure you see the growth of China's military from a very different perspective. Tell me more about the misunderstandings that you think are crucial to be corrected if others are looking at China's military and the overall idea behind China's growth of its military strength.
Chinese military has not used force against any other countries after 1979. So in human history, you would hardly find another example of how a country could have arrived so peacefully. This is the fact. This is agreed by everybody. So I would actually consider that China's unique experience of developing while maintaining peace is very much unique. So my best hope for the PLA is actually PLA would try its best to safeguard China's sovereignty and the territorial integrity, which is a responsibility of every military in the world. But at the same time, just to keep on doing what it has been doing, that is to help others in humanitarian areas, be it peacekeeping, counterpiracy, or disaster relief. Do not you involve yourself in some other missions like, military operations here and there and killing people here and there with a number of excuses, which can only be forgotten with the lapse of time. Who care about all these reasons why you should kill these people or those people? So the good thing is, after 1979, the PLA has not even killed a single foreigner overseas. I mean, overseas. This is true, and the Chinese military have been, dispelling the pirates or apprehending pirates in the Gulf of Aden. But we have not been trying to kill them. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a good example of how PLA could actually help other people in the best possible manner, mm-hmm, while maintaining peace and stability and fulfilling its own international obligations.
Senior Colonel Zhou, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei on behalf of my team. Thanks for being with us. Bye for now.